From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney.
Rough Beauty is an inspirational memoir from award-winning poet Karen Ovinen. Oh, did I just say that wrong?
I think you did it right.
We just heard the right way to pronounce her last name, which chronicles 40 seasons of living wild in the Colorado Rockies and the shifting landscapes of being alone. The story explores Karen's pursuit of solace and salvation by shedding trivial ties and living in close harmony with nature, along with her account of finding community and love. And it's sure to resonate with all of us who fantasize about disconnecting and living an authentic life. Karen, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
So it's Ovinen.
It's Ovinen.
Ovinen. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, the many ways it probably gets mispronounced.
Most people think it's French.
Yes.
So they say Avenin.
Oh, okay.
But it's Finnish.
So talk first about your desire to isolate yourself, to go away from it all, to be able to write.
Well, it comes, that kind of impetus to leave or to walk away came from a couple of things. One was from the family that I grew up in was not, we were kind of a disconnected group of people and very rootless with each other and with our extended family. And so family was never a crucible that contained me or held me. And also the messages I got in my family were that I would be somebody's wife, good wife someday, or Miss America. Neither thing interested me very much. And I thought, you know, the messages I got as a girl were that I was weak and I needed support or help or protection. And I thought, no, I don't. And I'm going to show people that I don't. And my family grew up camping, and the woods were a big part of our life, and it was a place where I felt at home and peaceful. And so I kind of gravitated away from family and also away from society because I was getting some of those same messages about who I should be, and I wanted to decide who I wanted to be by myself. And so I went to the, and I wanted to be a writer, so I went to the woods. I suppose it's a little bit Thoreauvian to try and decide who was I and what could I be?
When did you cease to have something to prove to yourself in others and begin to be the person that you wanted to be or that you thought you were trying to be?
That process is so gradual, and I think it's really hard to pinpoint when exactly. I spent 40 seasons, so 10 years living alone in a wood stove heated cabin. And when it was a very gradual kind of softening, I would say. And I've actually subsequently come to realize that there is real strength in kind of going what I call unguarded into the new day, not having to armor up, not having to be tough, not having to prove myself to people. And so I would say it was just a process, a long, long process. I don't think there was one moment. I think it started, of course, when at the beginning of the book I recount a cabin fire. The first place I moved to kind of be a writer, I moved there, I was just finished my PhD, and just shy of my 40th birthday, it burned down. I lost everything, my writing, my books. I've been a chef and a caterer, so I lost all my stuff. And I had to start over. So that probably pushed me in the direction of kind of realizing that I can't do it alone and I need help too.
Karen, I keep hearing the term disconnect. You know, your family was disconnected. You disconnected yourself from society by living alone in a cabin. But the flip side of disconnection is finding connection. And when you're disconnecting from some aspects of society and moving into a cabin alone, I would imagine there was a deep connection with nature.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I really found my own wholeness in solitude and space. And the natural world coaxed me back into myself. And that is the most amazing thing about the natural world and wildness is that if you sink in and you let it, it will work on you. Wendell Berry says, only when we have discovered the world for ourselves do we cease to be alone. So paradoxically, I sought solitude, but then it was kind of this opening out. I did end up connecting much more to the world around me, the natural world, but then also to people.
Yeah, talk about what that connection led to, because that's what I see. I see sort of the disconnect being the stripping away and creating the space and the opportunity for future connection. So how did that translate, and what does that look like in your life now?
Well, you know, I have a very strong impulse to walk away and to just think, well, this is not for me. I'm going away, and to isolate myself. And so what happened after the fire, I was living in and around this mountain town, Jamestown. This is before I moved into the cabin for 10 years. I worked at a little cafe there, and I knew the townspeople in a kind of peripheral kind of way, but I kept my distance because I didn't think I was like them. I didn't know if I really liked them at all. And so the first thing that happens is that this town of 300 people threw me a benefit. I was penniless after that fire. I had nothing, and I had no way to start over. And they just were so generous. Somebody found me a place to live for a few months. People donated items. They raised money for me. And I really honestly would never have recovered if it hadn't been for the generosity of Jamestown. And I'm talking about people that I don't like and people who didn't like me, who showed up to bid on items and donate money and really help. And this is where I really started to understand what community really is. It's not a bunch of like-minded people sitting around holding hands singing Kumbaya. It's actually people who are in a relationship with each other, and they have a duty because of that relationship. And so you might not like each other, or you might not want to talk to each other, but when somebody needs help, everyone comes running. And that was astonishing to me. I had never experienced anything like that. And so I think that was the first step toward embrace. And so then I started to get involved in Jamestown, and I joined the arts organization. I caused a little ruckus. I started poetry nights at the Merck. And I realized that, yeah, this was my community too. And I didn't have to love everybody, but I felt responsible for them and they for me.
Karen, I just Googled Jamestown because I wasn't sure where it is. I know it's in Boulder County, but when you Google Jamestown on Google Maps, up pops a photo of a ramshackle cabin. And of course, this is what I'm assuming, this is your house. But it is kind of funny.
The house that I lived in was a 500 square foot. It was an old fishing cabin, and it was above Jamestown by Overland Mountain, so 4 miles above Jamestown. And Jamestown is an old mining town. And at one time, they say there were 10,000 people in the valley, which would have been quite a lot. It's a very narrow valley, and it has one stop sign, a post office, and the Jamestown Mercantile, and then some houses. So I lived up top, and my cabin was made of wood 2x4. So picture wooden bricks stuck together. And where those little bricks, pardon me?
Nope, I didn't say anything.
Oh, where those wooden bricks come together, there would be little holes of, where air and light could get through. And so I spent the first winter kind of trying to caulk things, but I couldn't get everything because there were hundreds of these little corners. And so, in January, here comes the icy, 10 below January wind where the air crystallizes. And snow, I wake up because snow is blowing onto my face. So it was very, very rustic.
That expanding spray foam insulation just cannot stick a house together without holes and cracks.
it can't. And also, I'm sure people in Park City there have to be kind of mountain houses like this up there where they're just really put together with spit and some glue. And, the top where the roof met the wall was a foot of paneling on either side. That was it. And I had to try and fill it with that foam stuff to try and insulate the cabin. And the cabin was up on pylons surrounded by a rock block, so there's no foundation. The floor was cold.
Well, now I'm even further convinced that the Google Maps photo of Jamestown is your cabin. You'll have to look at it and let me know.
I think I know that photo. I think it's an old mining. There's a lot of, up here in Colorado, we have so many mining claims and, you know, residual cabins, and some people live in some of them. So,
and did you interact with the, I mean, the community was 4 miles away. Did you visit daily or weekly or monthly? How did you kind of provide for yourself?
Well, you know, so I'm a writer, so I have like four jobs. And you know, one of them, I taught at two different colleges and I taught online, and then I cooked at the Jamestown Mercantile. And at the time of the fire, I was actually a rural postal route driver as well. So when I needed to go to town to the grocery store, I had to drive down to Boulder, and I drove right through Jamestown. And so I interacted with people when I was working at the Merc, and when I drove through, and it's a funny little thing, you drive through town, and there's a dip in the road, so that you slow down. It's right in front of the Merc. And there's always people out on the porch of the Merc smoking and drinking, and you kind of wave hi and keep on going. And so I interacted a lot. And then after I got involved with JAM, the Arts Board, I was a member of the Arts Board, and then I was a president of the organization. I was, interacting quite a bit with the town. I realized that what I really was looking for was community and for connection. And then I didn't have to know. I realized that I didn't have to, not everybody had to be my best friend, but I really came to love, I have come to love this town, and they still feel like my community, even though I don't live there anymore. I recently bought a house with my husband a year ago, and we live about 45 minutes down the highway from Jamestown.
So I was going to ask you to bring us to present day and what connection looks like for you these days.
Well, at the end of the book, I meet a man, and what's remarkable about that is I really spent my entire life alone, and I wasn't a dater or anything like that. I just thought I was going to be a lone wolf all my life, and so this man, Greg, was a huge surprise. And at the end of the book, Jamestown experiences a catastrophic flood. It was a 1,000-year flood event, and about a third of the town went down the river. And because of that, there was no place for us to move. We wanted to move in together, and my cabin was not big enough, and there was no place available because things had been snapped up by people who had been displaced. And so we move away for 3.5 years and live on what I call in a prairie town outside of Boulder. And then a year ago, we just moved back to the mountains, and I just watched a bear walk through my yard this morning, right before you called. I called my neighbor. There's a bear coming to your house. So connection really now looks like I'm still involved in the Jamestown community, but I'm also I teach at CU, and I actually am really to first years. I'm really invested in kind of creating community with young people now too.
Mm. The book is Rough Beauty, 40 Seasons of Mountain Living, and a lot of great critical reviews of your book. And you're being compared, of course, to Cheryl Strayed's Wild, and then compared to someone who we love to claim here in Utah as one of our own, Terry Tempest Williams. And so, and you have some similar background, I think, to Terry Tempest Williams, in that you're a poet and, living this life in nature.
Well, she's always been a huge inspiration to me. I mean, she's visited Boulder several times. And actually, there's a really interesting story that I tell in the book about her, which is that after my fire, everything that I owned was gone. The writing was one thing. That was bad enough. But all my books was kind of insult to injury, because a book is memory. A book is, you pull it off the shelf and you remember who you were when you were reading that book.
Yeah.
and where you were. And it's, so that was terrible to me and devastating. And many of my books were first editions and they were signed. And well, so about 5 months after the fire, the college where I was teaching contacted me and said, do you still want this book on reserve? And I had placed Refuge by Terry Tempest Williams with my own annotations in it on reserve for my students. And so I had one of my books. And as fate had it, she came to the University of Colorado to get the Wallace Stegner Award. And so I brought my book to her, and I kind of sheepishly told her my story. And she was so kind, and she wrote something really beautiful in my book about transformation and growth. And so that was a very important moment for me. And it's an honor, actually, to be compared to her. So.
And Wallace Stegner as well.
Yeah.
A bunch of great Western writers, and you seem to belong to that cadre of people. So congratulations. And I just want to mention, you'll be in Salt Lake City next week on Thursday, June 27th, and you'll be signing books at the King's English. Is that right?
Right. And then I'll be at Dolly's, actually, on Friday.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, Dolly's. For kind of an informal meet and greet at about 6:30. And I'm traveling with the writer Elizabeth Gehagen, who has a collection of short stories out called Eight Ball. And so we'll be, so it's a double header.
Oh, wonderful.
And yeah, so we're really excited.
So Dolly's is literally, I could, with my potato launcher, hit Dolly's right here from KPCW. So you'll have to stop by and say hi at the radio station.
Oh, for sure.
As well.
That will be fantastic.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Karen Avanen is the author of Rough Beauty, 40 Seasons of Mountain Living.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.